Everybody, I'm Beatty Cohn Fredos, and welcome again, my friends, to the Ask Beatty Show. And for those of you who are actually tuning in for the first time and you hear this really upbeat music and you hear Beatty Cohn Fredos and Ask Beatty, I am a psychotherapist and a sex therapist. I'm also the author of the book For Better, For Worse, Forever, Discover the Path to Lasting Love. And this book I am so proud of. In fact, I wrote it for my daughter, Jordana. And what I did was, is that I did research with 450 people. It's a lot of people in the Boston, Providence, and Connecticut areas. And I actually devised a 10-step formula that teaches people exactly how to assess who's right for you and who is wrong for you before committing to any serious relationship. And I can certainly tell you that we can all do with relationship education, given the fact that the divorce rate in this country for first marriages is 48%. The divorce rate for second marriages is 67%, and that number goes up, not down, for third marriages. And 74% of couples marrying for the third time also find themselves in a divorce court. I also, by the way, I'm a national speaker. I write columns. I'm an expert guest in national radio and television, and I have a private practice here in beautiful spring-like New York City and also in East Hampton. So what is the Ask Beatty Show really all about? Well, it is about empowerment, because we talk about all of the things that we can do to really improve the quality of our lives and the quality of our relationships. And sometimes there is a lot of difficulty in taking care of ourselves and taking care of our families and nurturing our relationships. So on the Ask Beatty Show, we talk about, of course, mental health issues and sexuality, relationships, and of course, how and what to do to maximize our physical and emotional well-being despite all of the stressors in our lives. And for those of you who've been listening to the Ask Beatty Show for the last number of years, I think that today is the 343rd or 44th show that I've been doing here on the Progressive Radio Network. So you know what my mantra is. My mantra is that we all need to acknowledge and address and take whatever steps that we need to resolve our issues as best as we can, that are the issues that are really getting in the way of our being able to live a happy and joyful life. And what I have hoped that I've convinced you over the years is that we don't need to take this journey on our own, and that reaching out to family and friends and if need be professionals do make our life's journey easier and less isolated and alienated and lonely, because we have to look at the reality of what is going on in the world of mental health. For example, if we're looking at depression, there are 350 million people worldwide suffering from depression, and 17 million adults in the United States suffer from depression, which translates into 7.1% of all adults. And for women, that number is 8.7%. And interestingly, and of course, not surprisingly, females experience depression, or at least we express our feelings of depression at roughly two times the rate as men do. So half of all Americans seem to be seeking help for depression. And this was actually a statistic this morning that I was very, very surprised to find. And that some of the studies show, and although I question these statistics as well, that about 80 to 90% of those seeking treatment for depression are treated successfully. So if that statistic is correct, although, as I say, I sort of wonder about that number, that is all good. And if we're looking at anxiety disorders, studies tell us that there are about 40 million Americans that are suffering from a variety of anxiety disorders. And if we look at the world of domestic violence, 4 women are killed every day by their intimate partners. So we have to be so careful who we do let into our lives. And you know, if we're looking at the post-COVID life, although there are still cases and the numbers of cases, you know, that we're hearing about, there's still some real concerns that we need to maintain social distances and that we must not be irresponsible when it comes to just assuming that the COVID world is really gone. But with COVID, it has forced us, I think it's forced probably all of us, to reevaluate how and with whom we want to live our lives. And I think for a lot of people, it has shifted our priorities and it's brought a new kind of enlightenment. And for many of us, there's less commuting and more time for self and families, and hopefully more of an ability to connect with friends and family now with Zoom and the computer world, anywhere in the world without leaving your home. So the real questions I think that many, many people that we're all asking ourselves is, you know, who do I really want to spend time with? What events do I want to attend? So that we're not just, I think, for most of us, just going back to the old way of living. I know that I haven't seen a live patient in over a year. And for me, I mean, Zoom has been a savior, but it is certainly not the same as being able to see people face to face. And hopefully that is going to change very, very soon. However, for many people, there is a double burden. Many, many, many people do not have that kind of option where they can stay home and work from home. And these are the people who, in quotes, serve the privileged, the garbage collectors, the transit workers, the wait staff, the first responders, the doctors and the nurses. And for these people, there has been increased family pressure, more stress, less family time, continued concern about the virus. And yet one of the things that I feel that we all need to think about as we go about our days is to try to incorporate things like exercise and meaningful communication and making sure that we are actually spending quality time with the people who we really want to be spending quality time with. And I hope that we've all taken a moment to thank all the people, all the first responders, all the garbage collectors and the transit workers who have really been there to make things work during such a difficult, difficult period of life. Well, today I have a really, really wonderful guest who I have yet to meet in person, and I'm hoping to do so within the next couple of months. Welcome, Beth Battaglino, and I hope I pronounced your name correctly.
Hi, it's Battaglino, but you did very close. So thank you for having me.
Well, good, Beth. And I'm so glad that we are finally connecting. And I want to give you a proper intro. Beth is an RN, and she is the Chief Executive Officer of Healthy Women. And I have a confession to make, Beth, that until I actually connected with you, I was unaware of this amazing, amazing national organization. And I'd like you to tell my audience about Healthy Women and what your mandate is and all of the different initiatives. I've been going through some of the literature, and there are amazing things that are going on that we all really, really do need to be aware of. So let's start with telling everybody about Healthy Women.
Absolutely. So again, thank you for having me. And Healthy Women is the leading national not-for-profit women's health organization. We've been in business for more than 30 years, and we were created to meet the needs of women, no matter what your socioeconomic background is, to provide resources and information so that women can have access to information that they need, information that they may not have. But more importantly, what we do is educate them and then engage with them and make sure that they have the questions and the information in hand to have a successful conversation with their healthcare provider to understand what treatments are available and what might be best for her. And we've evolved since
all of the Healthy Women information and seminars, mm-hmm. everything is online. Is that right?
We are. We're a digital platform right now. So all of our information is online. It's available 24/7. And what's really important and for your audience to understand is that everything is medically reviewed and vetted. So it's reviewed by a medical advisory board. So consumers can understand that when they're coming to our site for information, that it's medically accurate. It's not just something that people have pasted or posted up on the site. Everything goes through strict editorial guidelines so that she has the most current information available on the topic, again, making that educated decision on what is best for her. But what I wanted to talk a little bit about is that's how we created Healthy Women. We created Healthy Women to help educate women and provide resources for them, no matter what, again, their socioeconomic background was. But what we've done in the early 90s when the internet became such a game changer for all of us, right, going from print and a toll-free number to now having online access, we made sure that we created a new platform where women can engage with us online. But more importantly, we've also shifted from a very disease-focused organization to now looking at how we can provide her with information to age smart and age well.
Mm-hmm. I mean, that's so important. And I'm so glad that you mentioned that everything is peer-reviewed, because there's so many things online and it is very confusing. And one needs to be sure that if you are going to a site that you are really getting accurate information. Otherwise, it can become extremely confusing and frustrating, and people can really end up going in the wrong direction.
Correct.
So tell me, what are some of the current initiatives that are going on with Healthy Women right now?
Well, one of the biggest ones, and to no surprise, is COVID, right? And making sure we're part of we're taking the lead with two other great organizations, the Alliance for Aging Research and the Black Coalition on Aging, to partner and create a program on COVID that really addresses the education and equity component of it, making sure that people understand the importance of the vaccine, that the vaccine is safe, that it's okay to have questions and concerns, but making sure that they have a great website that they can turn to that dispels the myths and provides the facts. And so that was our big initiative. And we wanted to partner with these other two organizations to make sure that the information was going out to the right audiences, and that everyone, you know, has access to high quality information, and that we could hold their hands during this whole, you know, during the whole the journey, really, this whole journey from the importance of the vaccines, to the vaccines becoming available, to understanding who's going to be in line for the, you know, the first phase of vaccines, and now that vaccines are available to all, making sure that we're still there to answer any questions and to continue to be that sounding board on why vaccines are so important. And if we don't all get vaccinated, the pandemic will never go away. So that's one of our biggest initiatives right now.
A very important initiative. You know, yesterday I was walking around the Upper West Side, and I would say that 98% of people walking outside and walking in Riverside Park and Central Park are still wearing masks. Now, what are the thoughts on this? Because it was my understanding that if we were outside, that we, you know, we were alone, or if we were with friends or family who had been vaccinated, that it would be okay and that we would be safe to be walking around maskless. And yet it was interesting to observe this. So even though I ended up not wearing a mask initially, I was looking around and I was thinking, I think maybe you should wear a mask. So what is the latest thinking and research about wearing masks when we're walking around outside these days?
Well, here's what I can share. It changes on a dime, right? And I don't think we're ever going to go back to where people are going to be completely without masks 24/7. I think, you know, there's just something about the mask now that makes us feel a little bit more protective, or protecting others from, you know, from germs that we may have. So what we have been doing is making sure that we link up to the CDC, because they're the ones that are able to make sure that their information is updated within, you know, 24 hours or sooner regarding the mask. But from our understanding, our recent understanding is that, yes, if you are outside and more than 6 feet away from each other and that you've been vaccinated, you do not need to wear the mask. But I can tell you, this week we were at a celebration, a family celebration, where everyone was vaccinated, except for the young children that we were with. So everyone was still wearing masks, even though we were outside. The mask definitely came down during, you know, dinner and but just when we got after dinner and everything, people started, you know, putting their masks on. And when we were leaving, we were still, you know, not giving kisses. We were giving hugs, but not kisses. So it was just interesting. And I think everyone's going to have to do what they feel comfortable in doing. And so I, as much as, you know, people are ready to get rid of the mask, I don't think we're going to see a total disposal of the mask anytime soon.
Mm-hmm. And yet, of course, in different parts of the country, you know, I have some friends in Sarasota. I used to live in Sarasota, and people are not wearing masks. And, they're walking around, and I haven't been checking, you know, recently what the incidence of COVID is in that part of the country. But as you say, Beth, people are going to do what they're going to do. We can only give them the best evidence-based advice and findings. Right. And in the final analysis, people are going to have to make choices whether or not they are going to actually do what is in their best interest according to the research or not, right? I mean, we can only provide
Or take that extra level. You know, go with your own gut feeling, your own internal instincts on whether or not you feel comfortable. And if you have any doubt, you know, just always keep that mask in your pocket or in your purse. There's nothing wrong with wearing a mask.
No, exactly. Is there any other COVID information, updated information perhaps in the last 24 hours that my audience should know about?
Within the 24 hours, you know what? I have not seen anything come across my screen, but I can tell you that if you would like to look for more information, you can visit healthywomen.org, because we are keeping track of the, you know, information and what's being changed within COVID, and as well as the CDC is a great resource for your audience to look at for the, you know, most current COVID information. So the CDC let me just make sure I have the right address that I'm saying to your audience. I think it's gov. it's cdc.gov, and it's the first thing that comes up is the coronavirus information. So that would be a great resource for your audience to go to.
Great, great. And I also was really, really interested in the Cancer Care Healthy Women's Initiative that you're involved with as well. So tell us about that, Beth.
Well, this is a topic that many of us do not want to have, right? So it's once you get diagnosed with cancer, understanding the financial piece of that, right? But it's an important one because it affects not only the patient, but affects the whole family. So making sure that healthcare professionals that are helping that patient navigate, as well as the patient and her family, have information to help with that conversation, that important conversation about understanding the treatment, what's covered by your insurance, and what the cost is going to be, and additional resources that you can tap that you may not even be aware of, is what was so important for us to make sure we pulled through for this campaign. And we partnered with the best. So we partnered with Cancer Care, which is a great organization. They're based in New York City, and they have so many unbelievable resources for patients and their families, including grants that can be given out. They have social workers that, are available to patients and their families. They have, support groups, and they are really the organization that can take that patient's hand and make sure they hold it and help provide her the information and resources as she's going through her cancer treatment and post-treatment, which is so important. So the whole concept of understanding the cost of cancer was extremely important to helping women, because we may have the patient or we may have her caregiver, right? We may have her mom, her sister, her friend that is helping that patient navigate. So making sure that these other people on her team have the information and the resources and the questions to ask, and understanding what other organizations are there to support this patient and their family was so important, which is why we addressed the Cancer Cost Initiative, the program, and partnered with Cancer Care.
Because, this is so important. I mean, this is such an important resource because, you think about you talk to your doctor, you speak to, a medical professional, when you're there at a hospital or at a doctor's office, and, there isn't much time. And perhaps many of these people are unaware of all of the various different resources that are available. So I would think that it is so important for people to be made aware of, the Healthy Women's site, so that they have some really additional help in being able to navigate, medical conditions, whether we're talking about physical problems or mental problems, right? Because we certainly can't know about any of this. I mean, as I said to you at the beginning, I'm amazed that I was not aware of Healthy Women. And I wonder, I mean, I've been living in the United States now for 30 years, and how is that possible? So, I think about so many people who probably have also not been made aware of this incredibly important resource.
Right. No, it's true. I mean, and we're very thankful that you are having us on your show today, so more and more people can understand what Healthy Women does, and that we are available, and what we do well is we make sure that we hold her hand and direct her to great resources if that's what she wants, or information. We have that information and we provide it in different ways so that it's not one size fits all. We're providing it to her in a way that she would like to receive it. So if you want to receive it on your social channels, the information can come through to your social channels. If you would like to receive a newsletter, we have a variety of newsletters, and you can pick and choose all of the newsletters, or you can pick one that meets your needs And then we have information that's constantly changing on our website. And then we participate in numerous podcasts so we can get the information out in different ways to really meet her needs. And the most important thing right now for us is not only to provide, you know, disease-specific information. So if you're diagnosed, we certainly have that information to help walk you through. Here's what you need to know once you're diagnosed. Here's the resources. But we also provide that great information on how you can live well. And what's been so amazing in these past 30 years is to see how research and innovation has improved women's health, right? So we're seeing now that their preventative care is so important. So getting your annual mammogram can actually save your life. Getting your annual women's wellness visit and making sure you get your pap test and HPV vaccine and making sure that you stay compliant on your HPV, on your vaccines, and making sure you're aware what vaccines are due based on your age and stage of life. And what preventative screenings are due based on your age and stage of life is so important because we know these all do impact the quality of your life. Making sure women understand that heart disease is the number one killer, not breast cancer. So understanding the signs and symptoms of, heart disease, understanding that it's so important to make sure you get your blood pressure taken and understand what those numbers are. It's not okay for a healthcare provider to say your blood pressure is a little high. You need to understand what those numbers are and what you can do to help bring it down. The importance of staying on medication that you're prescribed and being compliant is so important because we know this all does affect our life and that we can live longer, but we can live well, right? Live well and longer, not just live longer. So that's Helping Women's mission right now is to continue to make sure that women age well and age smart and age well. And we're providing her the resources and the information. But more importantly, we're sharing real women, real stories. So talking to those women that are living, that have been diagnosed with breast cancer, but are living longer and living well with breast cancer. Talking to people with autoimmune diseases that are living longer and living well with autoimmune disease and how they're doing it. Making sure that we show the positive. It's not just the negative. It's showing the positive aspects of how women can live great today.
Let me ask you this, Beth. So people who are going to the healthywomen.org site and they're doing some reading, but they may want to speak to somebody directly. They have mm-hmm. questions that perhaps they haven't found the answers to. Is that also a resource that is available to actually be talking to somebody about their specific concerns or specific questions that people might have?
You know, that's a great question. So we have a toll-free number that's answered by a live voice. And depending on what their questions are, because we would want to make sure that we connect her with an expert. Right. So if it's beyond a Healthy Women question where they need to talk to, say, a healthcare provider or a counselor, then we'll make sure that we connect her to the right resources where they're talking to the people that they need to talk to. So putting them in that's
amazing. This is absolutely amazing, mm-hmm. Beth. And, you know, how have you over the years gotten the word out about healthy women?
Right. So it's all through successful partnerships and working with, not just other organizations, but working with the media too. So when we first launched healthywomen.org, it was in the 90s. And that's when women's books, so a lot of the women's magazines were still in business. You know, now a lot of the magazines are not in business. There's still some that we partner with. And for instance, we'll be doing a series on Alzheimer's with Prevention Magazine. But working with women's books on different surveys and making sure that they include our name and list our organization because they were doing a piece on health and we helped them with information to complete that article. So they would, and this is back in the 90s, and it was all about creative marketing, but making sure that we stayed visible. We also worked with some products, consumer products, where our name was listed on different products that you would find in a grocery store. And for more information, our website would be branded on that. We have an amazing group of health advisors, and they're called our Women's Health Advisory Council. So you'll see some of the major and leading healthcare providers that are part of our medical expert team. So they're going to be constantly mentioning or included in articles or including us in their articles. So you're going to see the healthywomen.org brand. So it's all about, you know, for us as far as a not-for-profit and creating, you know, brand visibility in our website, it's creative marketing, but also working with the best of the best. So the best women's books, using some of the best healthcare providers, and constantly doing webinars. And if you search women's health or a women's health condition, you know, we're going to pop up. You're going to see us, you know, more prominent in your Google search. We're going to be popping up. We've worked closely with Dr. Oz and his team at ShareCare. We were named, Oprah named us one of the top women's health websites, as well as Forbes named us the top women's health website in 3 consecutive years. So, you know, while there's so many that haven't heard about us, there's a lot of women and healthcare providers that have heard about us, which we're so grateful for.
And I'm so grateful for this resource. You know, I'm certainly going to actually speak to, you know, many, many women, you know, over the internet, and I do podcasts and shows, and just to actually make sure that people are in fact connected with you. I mean, it just sounds like an incredibly important resource, you know, for all of us. So that's certainly going to be one of my commitments, is to make sure that people who may not, you know, like myself, had been, you know, really cognizant of you and the work that you're doing, that we're going to certainly change that. You know, I also wanted to ask you about the Healthy Women and the Black Women's Health Imperative Partner on National Obesity Awareness, that campaign. I did a little bit of the reading that you sent me, and it sounds fascinating. So what is that initiative like?
You know, we love working with the Black Women's Health Imperative, and it's a program that we join forces to raise awareness about obesity, but more importantly, again, provide the tools and resources on how we can improve, and information on new treatment options. Because for so many, you know, women, you know, it continues to be a struggle. So understanding how, you know, women can begin to shift and change. Change is, it's an easy word to say, but it's very hard to do, right? Like we all know that. Like, you know, saying like, I'm going to stop smoking, I'm going to lose 25 pounds. Very easily, it's easy to say. It's another thing to actually to do that, right? So making sure women have access to information, that we're providing information from women that are going through this journey, that are living this journey, and working together to make sure that, you know, the toolkits and the education and the resources are current and really meet the needs of today's consumers was so important to us. And making sure that they have information and access on, you know, all treatment options, from newly approved FDA treatments to surgical procedures to just prevention, and you know, that whole sensible diet, exercise, and how important it is, no matter what, you know, what vertical you decide to go, whether you do decide to take to do a treatment that, you know, a prescription treatment, or if you decide to do some type of surgical treatment, or if you decide to do it through you know, diet and just a change of lifestyle, making sure that you have the information, the resources, and those real stories. Again, it's what we find so powerful is to have those people share their story and their journey as they begin, or some that can share their success and what that success looks like to them today.
And I am sure that there is an enormous amount of motivation that comes out of, you know, being a part.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Being able to share your voice and share your success, as well as some of, we all know that, even if you fail or have a bad day, that there's other people there to support you and get you back on track the next, which is so
exactly.
important.
Exactly. And as you say, it's that support that is so important, so that you don't feel alone and you don't feel alienated, and you know that there is a resource out there that can really help you, really get to where you want to go, where there are people who will literally, as you say, Beth, take you by the hand on whatever journey it is that you are wanting to be on.
That's right. That sense of community, right? Like, we all love that sense of community when we want it and when we need it. And that's what Helping Women is. It's that community. And especially with this program, and I'm so glad that you pulled that out as an example with the Black Women's Health Imperative and Helping Women joining efforts together to make sure that she is supported during this
exactly,
journey.
Exactly. And one last question. Tell me, how does mental health fit in to the Healthy Women's Initiative?
Mental health fits into everything that we do, right? It starts at the top. So we always say it starts from your head, eyes, ears, nose, mouth, all the way down to our toes. So mental health, it's making sure that we address that in everything that we do when it comes to educational campaigns and programs, because it affects our overall health, right? Your brain, that whole making sure the anxiety and stress, and which we know is at an all-time high right now, that's not dismissed, right? And we make sure that, again, resources are provided. And, when we think about even, during COVID, but also one of the areas that we embrace and do a lot of work on is postpartum depression as well. So looking at it from an ages and stages and making sure that we have that, the support, the resources, the education, and that you're not alone. That's like kind of that's our template for everything that we do.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it sounds absolutely wonderful. So for example, if a woman goes to your site and she is feeling extraordinarily depressed, she's doing some reading, but you say that she is then able to actually speak to somebody who would then be able to refer her either to a doctor or a therapist or a self-help group. Is that correct?
So with depression, so this is something we would make sure we understood if she ended up calling the toll-free line, right, or got in contact. Many people do it via email these days, right? So they'll email and say, looking for a referral or I need some help. And what we would do, if it's an emergency, we're not like one of those 24/7 online hotlines, right? But we have access to the groups that do that, right? So making sure that we connect her with a group that can, if she needs to speak to someone and is having, an episode where she needs to get in to see someone really quickly, then we're going to make sure that we connect her with that resource, right? And give her some information. But usually, and I'm being completely, honest, with our site, it's more, I've just been diagnosed. And here's, I've just been diagnosed with, let's just use breast cancer, right? So I've just been diagnosed with breast cancer. I need to understand what I need to do next. Who should be on my team? I've been diagnosed with X, here's the stage. Is there any additional resources that you can provide me? So those are the type of questions we get. Usually the emergency depression questions, most of the people, if they need information and maybe it's a family member that's coming and looking for, for information, we can provide those resources quickly and make sure that they have access to the toll-free numbers and to the support groups.
So people are able to either email, and I would imagine from what you're saying is that they are going to be responded to within a very short period of time.
Short period of time, right.
They can choose to call your hotline.
They could call the toll-free number, right? But we're not one of those where you have it's not like the depression support group where you're, you know, they're the phones are manned by people that are qualified people to be able to have that conversation with the patient that may be going through an episode. We're going to make sure that we hold their hands and get them the resources that they need so they can get to that toll-free hotline. There's also what's been so, you know, what's glass half full, right, is looking at how much we're seeing now on television with celebrities, you know, coming out and saying that they've had, you know, they've lived with depression and what's helped them, right? So you're seeing more online applications, right, and apps for your phone where you can schedule like telemedicine visits or appointments with counselors if you're not, you know, if you need to talk to someone. So you're seeing more applications that are making speaking with healthcare providers that or counselors that can help with anxiety and depression much more available than we could have even 5 years ago. So that's the positive, is that we're destigmatizing and coming up with new solutions that make accessing, whether it's social workers or healthcare providers that specialize in anxiety and stress and mental health, much more common and much more easy, you know, easier to do.
Exactly. And I think we're really normalizing mental health issues more than ever before. And that's all such an important thing. It is so good that it is finally happening. And if it is the starlets and the movie stars that are, you know, coming out and saying that it is okay to reach out and ask for help, then so be it. Who cares?
So be it. That's exactly what I think too.
Yeah, as long as people are being given permission and that they're, you know, really allowing themselves to reach out and do what is in their best interest. So it sounds like you're doing an amazing job, Beth, and have. I mean, you've been the chief executive officer now right from the beginning, haven't you?
I restarted the organization in 1997, actually. So I've been... and then became the CEO in 2016. So yes, I've been the CEO for a while, but started from the ground up with the organization before restarting it and creating HealthyWomen.org. So it's one of those things I never planned, to be quite honest, but something that I'm very passionate about and I love, and I have an amazing team, and we would not be so successful without my team in place. So it's not, you know, it's making sure that everyone, you know, everyone is passionate about what we're doing and sees the great results of the work that we're doing for all women.
Well, it sounds like that you're really doing an incredible job. And for people, again, who are wanting to go to your website, if you could just give that website address again.
Absolutely. It's HealthyWomen, WOMEN.org.
Perfect. Listen, Beth, it was a pleasure. I'm hoping within a reasonable amount of time, I will actually be able to meet you in person. And again, thank you so, so much. This was very helpful for me, and it was very helpful for my audience as well. So take good care. And thanks so much.
You too. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. You know, it's amazing how many resources there really are out there. And sometimes we just need maybe to be lucky to be able to connect with resources that can be really helpful to us. Well, I'm going to change pace a little bit, and I want to talk about an article that was in the style section of the New York Times yesterday. And I've invited my husband, Jim Vredos, who is a sociologist and who is the host of the Radical Imagination television show on MNM, to have a very brief discussion with me about this particular piece. The title of the piece is When Best Friends Become platonic spouses. And I kind of did a double take when I was looking at the headlines yesterday. So here is what this is about. And by the way, thank you so much, Jim.
Come on, it's always great to be here. Great. We love to hear what you start with the article. Tell us what this article
okay,
about.
Well, this is what this article is about. Okay. Some are taking friendship. Now, in this particular article, they were focusing on women, but this is what it said. Some are taking friendship to the next level by saying, I do to marriage without sex. So I'm going to read a couple of paragraphs and then we can talk about this. First came blood brothers, best friends who would solidify their bond by cutting themselves and swapping a bit of blood. Then came the tiny house besties, friends moving into adjoining tiny homes. And today, some people are taking their friendship a giant step further. They are platonically marrying each other, vowing to never leave each other's side for better or worse. So we're talking about platonic friends. I guess it could be a man and a woman. It could be two men. It could be two women who are saying, we don't want to just be platonic friends, but we want to legalize this and be married. Now, obviously, there's some financial benefits and tax benefits, but it's, for me, it seems, Jim, it's that it's much more about an emotional benefit, an emotional and psychological connection to wanting to be married, despite the fact that sex and romance will not be part of the, in quotes, marriage.
So it's about a certain amount of security, right? Continuity, relationships, and sort of, well, I don't want to use the word cynical, but perhaps reluctance to believe that a romantic relationship is very lasting. Is that what you're sort of also picking up? And
that seems to be the gist of this. However, if you listened to my intro, and we're looking at real life,
right,
heterosexual divorce statistics. We're looking at 48% divorce rate for first marriages, 67% divorce rate for second, and 73% of couples marrying for the third time end up in the divorce courts. Now, that is for heterosexual couples. So it's going to be very, very interesting to see. I mean, if we're going to start to see a greater sample, I mean, we don't know how many thousands or millions of people who are opting for this kind of platonic marriage relationship. But if the divorce rate for heterosexual marriages is so high, I'm so curious, because I was actually just thinking about this right now, what those statistics are going to be for platonic marriages.
What if they find someone else in their life in the course of this marriage that they have that they do feel romantically inclined to pursue? And is that going to be allowed within that structure? Is it an open platonic marriage?
No. In fact, let me just read you what was in the piece. Okay. There are no statistics thus far about the number of platonic best friend marriages, and many people who are in them aren't open about their situation. But chat boards on Reddit within smaller asexual and aromantic communities, that's asexual, I don't have sexual feelings, I don't have romantic feelings, that's what those words mean, suggest that this could be a larger portion of the marriage population. Now, again, asexual is defined as having no sexual feelings or desires. Aromantic means having no desire for a romantic relationship. And heteromonogamous is a sexual relationship, as we know, between a man or a woman. But
well, it sounds very solid. Why not?
It could be.
It could work. It sounds like a solid way of establishing a lifelong relationship. And they would have similar issues as any other couple. that would need to look at how communication, how they communicate, how they have financial interests. Would they be interested perhaps in adopting children, lifestyles, where they might move? And so it's pretty much the same. In that sense, it's traditional, isn't it?
Actually, it sort of is, because initially, and of course you and I, you know, we're having this discussion this morning, it says platonic marriages have been prevalent since marriage became an institution. Well, marrying for love and romance is more of an oddity in human history. I mean, I never thought of it like that.
Romantic love is rather new in human history. Much more... history of arranged marriages and that sort of stuff. So I'm very glad to be in the more modern era here and a very non-platonic lifelong friendship marriage with you.
Well, of course,
for me, those were our
choices.
That's what I signed up for.
But in the United States, where marriage is incentivized with tax breaks and other couple privileges, marrying someone with whom you were not romantically attached, it affords multiple benefits. Mm-hmm. And then if you decide, I mean, if something changes, like in any relationship, couples are going to have to renegotiate perhaps a new deal, which is what you rightly said was, it's going to boil down to great communication, or hopefully good communication, and problem solving skills.
You should write a little article about this, and I bet you'll get a couple of calls, and you might have some more patients. You might become a therapist for a couple, because they're going to have the same issues. Minus the sexual.
Well, exactly. And who are we to judge whether or not people should marry because there are not just, that they have things in common, but that they need to have a sexual connection and a romantic connection? I think that people, particularly in the last year with COVID, I mean, have been feeling so isolated and lonely
and fearful of the future.
Exactly. And life these days, I think now more than ever, is so unpredictable. And if you can find someone who you can commit to, who you love, and who loves you, whether there's romance or sex or not, when you think about it, Jim, it's kind of a gift.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Is there mention of children? Is that one of the concerns too?
Yes. In one of the examples, and this was an example of two women, they had children from previous relationships.
I see.
So assuming that both of these women had been married to men previously, they had children. And so what they decided to do was that they joined and had a blended family. Mm-hmm. And there were two moms and siblings, from the two previous marriages. And what it said in this article, it said they're in the process of buying a house and getting a joint bank account, just like couples, who'd been previously married and divorced and who remarried. And their children consider each other brother and sister, and they call each woman mom. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Well, look, most sociologists, I think, would really support this sort of thing. They would advocate more alternatives to traditional forms of marriage, leaving open, of course, that option for everyone else that wants it. So, the more the better, the more options the better, and I think more power to them.
Exactly. It's just that, we're hearing more about these different kinds of relationships.
Yeah. I was just thinking, what's going to be next now? I mean, it's going to be actually fascinating to see how all of this evolves as as human beings begin to interact with each other in different ways.
And understand each other, yes, and accept each other. I mean, for so long, you know, gays were right in the closet. You know, trans, it was almost unheard of.
Exactly.
You know, it was a rare occasion where we would, you know, read about or we would hear about, you know, trans people. And it's a terrific thing that people are now being able to come out and be who they really are. And I think it's probably going to take a long time for a lot of groups, particularly a lot of religious and conservative groups, to accept the fact that there's variation amongst all of us, and that it is about love and acceptance. And I think a lot of people may be very fearful, right? That fear plays a huge part in not being able to accept.
You mean the other groups? Yeah, look, we watching Schitzel and Unorthodox. I mean, you see these changes even occurring in the hardcore Haredi community, and there's Catholics as well. So even evangelical Christians. So you're going to see that, you know, percolate in those communities as well. Not that they're going to open their arms toward it, but I think you'll see these changes in attitudes among us all. I think it's all for the good.
I think it's all for the good too. And hopefully we're going to all become a lot less judgmental, mm-hmm, and a more loving and more accepting, and that we will have more curiosity about people and relationships and arrangements that are different than, in quotes, what the, in quotes, yeah, norm was.
But I should add, in the few seconds we have left, don't be surprised that there will be counter movements or resistance to this, pushback. So that's to be expected as well. So people need to be strong and true to their values, and we need to understand that that'll be part of the movement as we move forward.
Here. Well, and I guess this is the reason why you've been involved in social movements, you know, mm-hmm, for all of your life. And, you know, I'm reading more and more about the trans movement. Yeah. I mean, there are laws, are states that are absolutely, absolutely not wanting to accept the reality.
It's been horrible behavior by
it's been horrible. Exactly.
New York and in other places. And that's beginning to change now. Beginning to change, thankfully.
It is. Well, I am looking at the clock, and we've gone from talking about healthy women. An interesting resource. I can't believe, Jim, that I had never, ever heard of this.
I certainly
am, and I'm learning, you know, just as I learn from my patients, I certainly learn a great deal from my guests. And talking about guests, I want to thank you for
I learn from you all the time, every day.
Well, we learn from each other every single day, and that's a good thing. And I, you know, it's always interesting to have a male perspective and a sociologist perspective on these social issues. You know, mm-hmm, you know, I don't want to just talk with other therapists. I want to be able to talk with people who, you know, are coming from a different discipline, yeah, and have, you know, some important things to add to the conversation.
Well, as you know, I'm very pro-therapy too, so.
Well, that's a good thing.
Yes.
Hopefully we are all pro-therapy, and that I've convinced
good
audiences.
Good
therapy.
Yes.
Exactly. Well, again, I want to thank you all so much for listening and tuning in every single week here on the Ask Beattie Show. And I really do hope that every week that there's some little thing that I may have said or a guest may have said where you will have an aha moment that will be helpful to you in some way in terms of living, in terms of your relationship, and of course what you're all wanting to do as you navigate your days is to try to live your lives as best as you can, doing what is in your best interest. So I leave you with my two weekly messages. And of course, the first is to do everything that you possibly can to do what is in your best interest and to love yourself. And the second message is that we all need to do a much, much better job in learning to accept and in learning to love each other. So goodbye, everybody. Have a good, good rest of the day and week. And I will talk with you next
week. Happy Mother's Day.
Oh, and happy Mother's Day. Yes, to all of the mothers. And I'm a mother and I love my daughter, Jordana. So again, have a good rest of the day. Bye-bye, everybody.